It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best in golf and golf lifestyle week after week after week. This week, I am really proud to have a guy who is one of the leading opinion setters, opinion makers in golf. He is Greg Nathan, the head of the National Golf Foundation, the leading a collector of stats about the industry. If you want to know something about where golf is going, where it is now, and where it has been, all three of these things, you have no better person to talk to than Greg Nathan. He's going to join us to talk about this exploding industry of golf, where it is now, where it's going in the future, and what it has to be careful of to make sure that it stays on top for the next year and 2 years and 5 years and beyond. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. I know you'll enjoy it. Also, we'll have our 2025 holiday gift guide. This is just a few suggestions that we have on things that you can give to show your appreciation for the loved ones in your life and those who love golf as well. We'll be able to give you some things that are really affordable and will really be loved and used, most importantly, by the people who play golf in your life. They will love it. You will love it. Everybody's going to love it. It's the holiday season. I'm just excited about it. You have to forgive me. So without further ado, let's go take a break. Go get yourself a crunchy snack, something to drink, and we'll be right back with Golf and Stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host, Caddy and Sherpa, for yet another episode. I am so thrilled that golf is doing so well. The statistics all point to it. More people playing more places. Almost every metric you can consider is showing positively for golf. And that's really important because we all think of golf in terms of the game of golf, where people like Scottie Scheffler and Tiger Woods go out and do their thing and win medals and trophies and that sort of thing. And lest we forget, tons of money. But it's also the game and the lifestyle of golf that has us playing and enjoying ourselves and getting to travel and staying different places and having a drink and talking afterwards. And the whole business of golf is dependent more on us than on them, if you can believe it. It's really, really true. But I am not the discoverer of that thing. Joining us today is somebody who knows more about that and those topics than I will ever know. He's the president and CEO of the National Golf Foundation. Please welcome Greg Nathan. Greg, welcome to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
It's always a pleasure going to the 19th hole after a round of golf, Michael.
Ain't it the truth?
Thank you. It is. Thank you for having me. I was able to get a nice round of golf in today at the new North Course at Apogee. And so we are literally in the 19th hole.
Okay, so it's very interesting that you said that because I'm going to be at Apogee later this week. I don't know if you knew that. I'm going to be at Apogee later this week, so that's crazy. So I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, right.
That'd be fantastic. I know you get a chance to play golf, being the head of the National Golf Foundation. Before we talk a little about the foundation, I'm just curious, how did you get into golf? Did you grow up with the game? Are you a latecomer, newcomer like me, or somewhere in between? How did you get connected to golf in the first place?
Michael, I did not grow up in a golf home. I grew up playing tennis. In fact, I played enough competitive tennis in my youth to be a club tennis pro.
Wow.
In Westchester County, north of New York City, I was a tennis pro at Waikiki Country Club in New Rochelle, New York, and I was also a pro at Braeburn Country Club in Purchase, New York.
Braeburn, I know.
I started hitting golf balls in a schoolyard. Actually, the schoolyard that was part of North Street School in White Plains, where I went to fourth grade, but I lived really close to it. And as the story goes, I had a friend of mine named Steve Monteverdi. And I used to go over to Steve's house when I was in whatever, fifth and sixth, seventh grade. And his father's golf clubs were always sitting in the living room. And I just couldn't help myself. I always went and grabbed one of those golf clubs. And there was something about it that was attractive to me. And my grandmother and grandfather on my father's side and my mother's mom all played. So it is said in my house that golf skipped a generation because my parents don't play. But by the time I was in my early 20s, Michael, I knew that I wanted to be in the golf business. It was a very fortuitous thing to know that. And how I got here is a story for another time, but I'm now 20. Roughly 25 years, 26 years in the golf industry. Worked at Golf Magazine and golf.com prior to my 19 years at the NGF. Worked on Madison Avenue in the advertising agency for the first 9 years of my career. And what could be better than to work in golf where my passion for the game and the business come together and I actually get paid for this?
Well, it's interesting that you say that you're on Madison Avenue doing this because I have noticed the many similarities between yourself and Don Draper. So this is all confirmed by this. I get this now.
Yes.
It's absolutely true. So you've been in the game and an observer of the game for a long, long time, which has educated you in a sense for your role here and your helicopter view of how golf is doing. And again, before we get to the game, I want to talk about NGF, National Golf Foundation. If you can give me sort of the elevator spiel on your mission and vision, who are its members and what do you intend to do?
Sure. Well, we are entering in 2026 is the 90th year of the National Golf Foundation, formed in 1936 by Herb and Joe Grafis. Herb Grafis is a Hall of Fame journalist, and Herb and Joe published the first national magazines for golf. They are two people who had a vision in the 1920s. Imagine that. In the 1920s, where golf was almost purely a private game in America, Herb and Joe Grafis, these two brothers from Chicago, they looked at each other and they said, "You know, bro, golf is going to be huge business in America. It's going to be part of the American dream." And because they were storytellers and publishers and journalists, they weren't just flapping their gums, Michael. They actually could do something to promote golf and help make it become big. So, in addition to founding the National Golf Foundation, they also were instrumental in founding the Superintendents Association. Herb was the first president of the Golf Writers Association of America. And Herb was the first journalist to be inducted in the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1977, which says a lot if you think about all the amazing people who wrote about golf going back in the game's history. Now, what they couldn't have predicted, they did predict beautifully that golf was going to become big business in America. What they couldn't necessarily have predicted was that the NGF was going to become essentially the trade association for every golf-related business. And we, the product of that trade association is information and data and insight. So that's a 501c6 member-driven organization. And that basically means those who pay us some dues every year to support what we do, we support them back with insights on the golf economy. So we are very fortunate to be the trusted source, the trusted resource on where the golf business stands. And we collect data that helps people understand the supply and demand sides of the golf economy, where the business is going. And I'm very fortunate that I get to work with the CEOs and leadership teams of virtually every golf business of significance. And they actually like what we do, Michael, because we do something unique that's of value to them. And we help make them the best informed leaders that they could be. And underneath the NGF, underneath the 501c6 is a wholly owned subsidiary, National Golf Foundation Consulting, where we get hired by individual golf companies inside their businesses and help them the way a McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group would, help them understand their customers and prospects better. And to tie this up in a little bow, because we study the business of golf, that's sort of an academic endeavor. But if you couple that with all the private work that we do with many of golf's leading companies in every sector, that's what gives us our 360 degree view, that we're not just studying the game academically. We think like entrepreneurs, and we that gives us this 360 degree view of the business that is valued by golf's most prominent business leaders.
Excellent. So, point of clarification, you have as members golf club manufacturers, you have golf resorts, you have golf courses, you have all those interested or who benefit from the advancement of the game can and should be members of NGF, correct?
Thank you, Michael. Of course they should be. And that's one of the things that's unique about us, which is we're the only organization that works with every vertical.
Yeah.
So whether you make point of sale software for golf shops, you're a golf retailer, you make chemicals and pesticides and herbicides, mowing equipment, irrigation, golf cars, clubs and balls, apparel, footwear, headwear. We work with companies in every sector. It's another reason why our perspective is valued.
Yeah, and I get that. You have the more people you have feeding information into, the more information that you can collate and distribute to your membership. So it all makes good sense to me. So given that fact, I'm going to give our listeners, if you don't mind, sort of the initiation package of free information from you, the head of the organization. And we'll start with this one. It seems by every measurement, as I was saying in the opening, that golf is stronger than ever in terms of the number of people who are playing, the types of people who are playing, where they're playing. Everything seems to be on the uptick. Would you concur with that?
The golf industry, the recreational golf industry, is in a generationally positive place. It doesn't mean necessarily that everybody's making money hand over fist. So I don't want anyone to get that idea. The golf industry is cyclical. If you think about all of those different business segments, Michael, they don't all fire on all cylinders all the time. But what is an absolute truth of the recreational golf industry is that it is from the recreational golfer paying a greens fee from which all blessings flow. So what we have, we'll start with understanding that, you know, that is the basis of the recreational golf economy, is you or I raising our hands and paying a greens fee. Okay. That's where it all comes from. So think about, we are in the fourth of the last 5 years that will be all-time record rounds of golf being played in America. Four of the last 5 years. Now, the last time they were this high was in, I call it the so-called Tiger boom.
Right.
So this period that culminated during that boom in like 2003, 2004. So if we compare where we are today with rounds being played in America versus that boom in play in 03, 04, we're breaking the records that were set back then with roughly 3,000 fewer courses roughly 2,000 fewer facilities. So think about that, what that would tell you about how solid the golf course business is.
Yeah.
All-time record frequency of play with 3,000 fewer golf courses in America than there were last time they were at this level.
That's kind of fascinating that number is there. I've talked to you a lot, but I haven't really had it parsed out for me that quickly, which tells you how many more people are actually playing the game and how much more often they're playing. So I'll ask you, who's playing? Is it everybody? Is it mostly males? Do we have a boom from 18 to 35 or 35? Who's playing?
You know, we've seen some really nice boosts in participation from groups that we always wanted more activity from in the green grass traditional game of golf.
Mm-hmm.
We are at the all-time high water mark relative to the number of women playing. So 8.1 million of the 29 million are women. So that's 28%. That's the all-time high water mark in count and all-time high water mark in percent of traditional golfers who are women. People of color, Michael, 7.7 million, 26% of all golfers being non-white. These are real meaningful positives. When I look at where the growth in rounds played, which I told you are at record levels, the growth in rounds played, juniors are punching above their weight. You know, so juniors make up about 14% of the 29 million golfers. So that's age 6 to 17. So they make up about 14% of golfers. They make up 29% of the rounds growth
mm-hmm.
that we've had
okay.
since pre-COVID 2019. So that's just one illustration of where certain demographics we're seeing a boost in. And now, golf will continue to look more and more like America, but there's no question that, look, golf is a pay-for-play sport, and because of the balance we are in of supply and demand, because of such heavy demand for the traditional game, this is where we talk about the strength of the golf course owner and operator business. So mm-hmm. of all the different verticals that I mentioned to you before, Michael, yes, it is the recreational golfer paying a greens fee from whom all blessings flow. But when those blessings are flowing, Michael, it means golf courses are financially healthy. And when I talk to the leaders of the multi-course owners and operators, most of them would tell you this is the best time in history to be in the golf course ownership and operations business. And when they're doing well financially, Michael, half of the industry, and the half I'm referring to are the half of the golf businesses whose end customer is a decision maker at a golf course. So while I talk about it is the recreational golfer paying a greens fee from whom all blessings flow, well, because golf courses are collecting a lot of those greens fees, it means they can invest in their business. It means they can buy or lease new golf cars. It means they have the money to reinvest in the physical plant, do renovations, improve the grass and turf quality, spend on irrigation equipment, spend on mowing and turf maintenance equipment. So it's really strong for the overall golf economy that golf course operators are financially healthy.
That is all fascinating stuff. I'm just taking notes right here, right now, so I can be smarter at the next party I go to. by the way, you're listening to Greg Nathan, President and CEO of the National Golf Foundation here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. So we've got a good fix on the fact that more people are playing, and they're playing at less golf courses, which is an astonishing figure. Some of the numbers you laid out. Let's talk a little bit about where they are playing and the courses that do exist, because I always have this hypothesis that I call the barbell theory, where probably in perpetuity, but certainly during these boom times, you're going to have the municipal courses, the ones that are lower priced courses, or which people enter the game at. That's where they come in and get their feet wet and decide if they're going to like it, and they can hit balls and play nine holes for $25 and that sort of thing. Those are going to do well. Then you have the destination courses, which are attached many times to hotel stays, and they're going to be the ones that are $200 plus, going on up to, you know, whatever you want to charge. If you talk about Pebble Beach, if you can get it, you know, those sorts of courses. Those two ends of the barbells are always going to be fine, but it's the ones in the middle that have more of the challenge, if you want to say, of attracting players and keeping their profits up, even during boom times. Would you agree with this assessment, or do you have any comments about that?
You know, I'll make my own interpretation of that question, Michael. You know, we have so much going on relative to, if you have balance in supply and demand, mm-hmm. and you have full tee sheets, like I've been describing, because we're at record rounds levels, with fewer courses, we've had reduction in supply that started in 2006. And so you had a natural correction of the relationship between supply and demand. So we're in a really amazing place with balance of supply and demand. But what that means is that golf courses have pricing power.
Yeah.
It means that they've been able to raise their greens fees. Now, those of us who want the golf industry to be financially healthy, you know, the last thing I would say, even though the price of golf has gone up, the last thing I would say is that golf courses should take less.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In fact, they've invested very heavily in dynamic pricing and yield management. And golf courses are much more equipped in general to be able to adjust if demand for tee times were to go down. But at the moment, demand is so high that they're able to get these increased greens fees. Now, that doesn't make everybody happy.
No, it does not. It does not. No. That's a very good point. It makes a lot of people pretty salty. Continue, please.
It can. It can make a lot of people salty. But where this may be manifesting itself, Michael, is that the off-course participation, the off-course ways that people can hit a real ball with a real club with a full swing, they are booming. And I imagine they're booming for many reasons. But one of the reasons is that, hey, if I want to participate in golf, if I want to be, hitting a ball and watching it go airborne and experiencing shot euphoria, there are other opportunities, whether it's screen golf, whether it's Top Golf or Drive Shack, you know, golf entertainment, or whether it's traditional driving range or gamified ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Off course participation is 37 million
yeah.
right now.
It's a lot of people.
In addition to the 29 million yeah. that are playing on course.
Exactly.
So one of the things that's happening, because, you know, paying greens fees are more expensive right now, is that people are looking for alternative ways when the tee sheets are full and they want to have a golf-like activity. They do have other ways that they can participate in the game. So once again, yes, we have a situation where the cost of golf is up, but we are also on this amazing run, and it doesn't help everyone, but we're on this run where affluent Americans, and yes, golf is played by affluent Americans, where affluent Americans are feeling pretty good about their personal financial situation. And I guess the way that I like to position it these days is that with 38 million people playing away from the golf course, that's a pretty deep bench. That's a pretty wide on-deck circle of people ready to fill tee times if, in fact, there was softness.
Mm-hmm.
So Of course, if the economy took a turn to the negative, if we had, the value of people's homes or the value, the Dow Jones or the S&P started taking a dive, all forms of recreation or all forms of all places where discretionary spending is essential. Of course, golf would take a hit, just like every other form of recreation. But golf is in a unique place right now where I think it's a bit more resilient than when the so-called Tiger boom hit a decline, when you had 9/11 and the wars that followed, when you had a stock market crash, where you had a mortgage crisis, you had home values dropping, you had golf courses closing. It was a different time then. And golf is about as cool as it's ever been, thanks to off course, the preponderance of off course, and thanks to social media and the celebrities and actors and musicians. Golf is in this very special place right now of being as cool as it's ever been, and a lot of people wanting to play the game
And you
in a
left.
variety of different ways.
I'll say that you left podcasters off that list, but I will take my bow and our thank you.
Fair enough.
later. Fair enough. I'll take it. You mentioned Tiger a couple of times, so we'll go back to that Tiger booming and compare it to the boom that we have now in golf, if we want to call it a boom, because Tiger really, and no one doubts this, influenced so many people to play golf, and they wanted to play on hard courses. They wanted to play like him. They came in and they kind of left, as you mentioned, for a variety of different reasons that came and went. And when you look at the state of professional golf now, we're looking at the link between the professional game and the recreational game. There's no real box office star that stands out now. I mean, you have Scottie Scheffler, who is arguably a generational talent, but he can still go to the 7-Eleven unrecognized. Okay, and that's not going to happen with Tiger. Everybody knew who that guy was. So my point is, before the pro game and the recreational game went in sync, sort of hand in hand together, up and somewhat down. Now it's there seem to be unhitched. The people are not necessarily watching the PGA Tour, but still, the growth of the game is there. Is that something that's sustainable? Does it really matter if the PGA Tour and other professional leagues are watched heavily, or is the game going to grow by itself?
What we've seen, Michael, over the years is that it is important, not just in America, but in other countries around the world where golf, if go for golf to grow, it's important to have a strong middle class, and it's important to have heroes. Those are two particular things. So the professional game is important for creating that opportunity for people to watch the game played at the highest level. But if there's ever been a time where we would look and see that the relationship between professional golf and recreational golf is not so closely tied, it would be right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you've had a pretty rough time relative to professional golf. And I'm only referring to the fact that we haven't had the best players playing against each other together in the same tournaments enough. We've had the split with PGA Tour and LIV. And while competition, many people would look at the competitive nature and say it's pushed the PGA Tour in positive ways, the bottom line is the product has been diluted over this period of time, but yet we've seen this generationally positive period in recreational golf. And if that isn't evidence of the marginal connection between professional golf and recreational golf, then I don't know what is.
I agree with
It
you 100%. I
it's
think this,
important.
there you
It,
go.
it's definitely important. But people don't play golf long term because they like the way that Tiger bombed his tee shots or could work the ball and win majors. They play the game because they love playing the game, because they enjoy the activity for its intrinsic values, for the social aspects, outdoors, exercise, its therapy. It's has so many positives, self-improvement, among other things. It's just such a great game. And people play this game recreationally because they like the activity, not because some other dudes or women play the game incredibly well.
I think it's so important. And I thank you for saying it, because I say it all the time. And it seems to be people, I still see people raising their eyebrows at this, but it's such an important thing to realize that people want to play the game for their benefit, not because that guy did it well, because that guy shot 67. It's because I had a good time. And that the unhitching of those two cars on the Gulf Railroad, I think it just frees up everybody else to do well. I think it's such an important point that you made. We're going to close with you because I don't want to keep you on all afternoon. I could definitely do an hour on each one of the questions that we've asked so far. But I do want to ask you about trends that you have seen emerge over the last couple of years. You've mentioned a couple, but if you want to restate them, and what you see coming for 2026 and beyond.
So it's hard to ignore the 150, 160% growth in screen golf participation that we've seen since 2019. And you know, Topgolf and golf entertainment have been huge relative to increasing the numbers of people playing away from the course, primarily because the Topgolf venues are so large. Like, you could get several million people through a Topgolf in a year.
Yeah.
So if you open 10 new ones in, let's say, 2023 or 2024, that in itself is going to boost the number of by millions of people playing golf away from the course. Okay. But those venues, you know, they've slowed down opening new ones. I think we're going to open somewhere between 2 and 4 by the end of 2025. I think two new ones have opened. And I think they have two more that are near opening. But it's a huge investment to open new golf entertainment venues of that magnitude. But you know what takes less investment is opening screen golf facilities, which tend to cater a little bit more to a serious golfer. But the idea that it's become affordable for people to have a simulator in their home, the number we track the number of commercial simulator facilities nationwide, the number of golf courses that will have simulator facilities is going to continue to grow. And that means just more people playing more golf in more ways. And I expect that that will continue. I think that the trend with the green grass game moving away from some of golf's more intimidating orthodoxies, golf becoming more welcoming and more accommodating, a move towards greater hospitality focus, it has to happen. And it's happening. It's, you know, perhaps it's happening a little slowly. And anybody who's been following this industry, as I know you have, Michael, for a long time, is it's the same things that get trotted out as to, quote unquote, why golf didn't grow previously.
Yeah.
It takes too long, it costs too much, and it's too hard. You know, if I was speaking in front of a group, as I often do, I'd be asking how many people could raise their hand as having heard that just this year.
Yeah.
Well, while those things are legitimate, they're not the reason why we have so many failed trials. Like, we had 6 million people play golf on a golf course in 2025 who did not play in 2024. 6 million inflow, but we only grew by 1 million. So what does that mean? I mean, it's not as clean as I'm going to make it sound right now, but if you had inflow of 6 million and you only grew by 1 million, that would tell you that there are literally millions of people who played green grass golf and did not stick with it.
Right.
Okay. And that means it's not those three things. Okay. Takes too long, costs too much, and it's too hard. Okay. It's because the golf course environment is intimidating.
Yeah.
To novices, to women, to people of color. And in many cases, we haven't always done ourselves a favor of operating like a true hospitality business. Mm-hmm. And that's where golf has this great opportunity to improve. And I've said this to you before, where the way that I simplify it is that every individual who walks in the front door of a golf course, they're in either group A or group D. And I'm really simplifying now. But group A are people like you and me who've played enough golf that we are comfortable in the golf course environment. We know where to go and what to do. We don't need a lot of help. Everyone appreciates good hospitality, but we don't need a lot of help consuming this passion, Michael.
Yeah.
But the group B, they're the ones who might not be so comfortable in the golf course environment, might be very concerned about doing the wrong thing or going in the wrong direction. And they don't wear a sign on their head that says, I'm uncomfortable in the golf course environment. So this is a real opportunity that I see in golf, in traditional golf, is golf operators making sure that they have a way without talking down to anyone, without being condescending, to have a way to find out, you know, have you been here before? You know, talking to someone.
Yeah.
Oh, you've been here before? Well, do you need any help? Do you know where to go and what to do? You know, Michael, actually, I could use a little bit of help. I'm not sure where I go to pay my greens fee and where to pick up my bag and where to get my range balls. And how could an operator actually solve this problem if they didn't ask the questions, if they didn't know who needs help and who doesn't?
Yep.
And this sounds so simple and it's very easy for me to say. It's just one of those things that when I stand on my soapbox, this is where golf could really improve. And that's with asking the right questions to be able to provide the level of hospitality that everybody at the golf course deserves. You know, you and I are perfect examples of people who are so fortunate to have found our way in this game. And so there's people who work at golf courses who maybe they don't think about themselves as being Pied Pipers for the game. It's not my job to get other people into it. Well, I think it is. You know, who are we to say that we shouldn't be sharing this incredible journey that we get to experience? We get to experience life with golf. And what a wonderful thing that is. And making people feel welcome, invited. You know, we want people here enjoying this game the way we do. It's just a different attitude, and it's an attitude of radical hospitality is what I like to say.
I just want to stand up and say amen to everything that you just said, because it is so important for the game now that it's seeking to attract more people. Once they say, yeah, I'll give you a try, what then? You know, you've got to make those people feel welcome. You've got to make those people feel like they're glad that they came. And more importantly, that they want to come back. And maybe even more importantly than that, they want to tell somebody else. I think you're just all over it, as you always are. I know that there's a lot of people who listen to this show who are in the business. Can you give us some information about how to get connected with NGF? And if there's any way for just the average fan to get any information from NGF, how can they do that?
Well, we're pretty easy to reach. And we're one of those lucky ones that have a three-letter URL. So ngf.org is a great starting point for anybody to find out more about the NGF and what we might be able to do to help you. And we love getting your phone calls. And we've got 25 employees many specialists in different disciplines. So of course, like I told you, this, those who love data, those who want to be smarter business people, whether you run a nine-hole golf course in Iowa or a public golf company worth in the bill with a market cap in the billions, we're here equally for both of those types of situations. And I encourage anyone who operates a golf-related business to reach out to the NGF. We'd love to get the phone calls. We'd love to get the visits to the website to explore how we can help. That's what we're here for, is to help golf businesses be more successful. And, you know, I'm just crazy enough, Michael, to think that there is not a golf business in the world that I cannot help. And basically, I making it my life's work to challenge myself to do that.
Well, I want to say on behalf of everyone who's had the benefit of your assistance, thank you for doing that, because you are doing one heck of a job. And I thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. And don't forget, you have an open invitation to come back anytime for something new, something different, or if you just feel like talking. You can just come back on here, Greg, because we'd love to hear you.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. And here at the 19th hole, where all the stories are told and the beverages are imbibed.
You had me at hello. I see that you've listened before. Greg, thank you so much, man. We will talk to you soon.
My pleasure, Michael. Great being with you, as always.
Thank you. That is the one and only Greg Nathan of the National Golf Foundation. There's so many things, so many good points that he made. This is a very rich episode. You can get into this one because, as I said, you could take any one of the topics or the questions that I had, and we could have gone an hour on each one of those. But I think what he said that was so interesting to me was about hospitality and how the game grows, because every business that does well treats its customers exceptionally, because they have so many ways to give feedback now, so many ways that they can talk to each other and steer you towards those products which they like, the way they've been treated, and steer you away from the products where they don't like they've been treated. So when you go to an expensive golf course, or if you get a chance to go to a private club, it's always Mr. This, Mr. That. How can I help you? Is there anything? Before you get to the counter, there's three people who ask you, is there anything I can do? And most of the time, I find it's kind of the opposite in retail golf. And if there's anything that needs to be done in this game, it's making people feel at home when they don't feel that way when they come to the golf course. The faster people can do that, the more they will come. I am sure of it. And I have, as my evidence, Exhibit 1, Greg Nathan, who basically said the same thing right now. So 2026, it's almost here. We'll see if people get the message. Oh, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. It is the holiday season, and as always, there are so many things that we have to be grateful for, but there's also so many things that we can do to show people how grateful we are, and that is gift-giving time. So, without further ado, let me give you some of the best gifts you can give in 2025 for this golf season. Let's start off with the Arkos Golf Gen 3 Smart Sensors. I have known these guys since they first got started, and they are absolutely the leaders and the trendsetters in measuring your game, measuring your progress, taking advantage of GPS, smartphone apps, all of it. They have incorporated every advance in general technology into an advance in golf technology. And the Golf Gen 3 Smart Sensors are the latest iteration of that. It's pro-level stuff, a precise range finder, and it all works everywhere. You got to get this. The Arcos Golf Gen 3 Plus Smart Sensors. And the price is actually surprisingly low. It's around $299 for that. And you won't be sorry when you acquire this thing. So really, get on the Arcos sensors. Number two, this is an easy one. Titleist Pro V1 golf balls. I personally wouldn't play anything else. I've been to the factory where they build Titleist golf balls up in Massachusetts. It is just unbelievable. And when you see how they make them, you wouldn't want anything else. But when you see how they play, you also wouldn't want to play anything else. It's not just for the excellence of the golf ball in terms of flight, in terms of hang time, in terms of how it feels around the greens. It's because every single ball feels like every single other one. And there are some balls out there that where you can get a sleeve or two, you feel like, hey, this is close. But you get another sleeve and you think that you're playing something else. Titleist is the answer. They are available everywhere. And if you get them from Titleist, you can get things like logos and stuff printed on them. Go to Titleist.com to see what you can get your best price for and on-time delivery for Christmas. The next thing is Travis Matthew, which has become a de rigueur, a name in golf and golf style. Their new shirt, the Zenna 2.0 Polo, is flexible. It's really, really soft, and it's breathable. And that goes without saying, along with the fact that it's insanely versatile. You really can't go wrong with having too many nice golf polos. Make one of them a Travis Matthew. And the price for this one-time shirt is less than $100. So really, get yourself into a Travis Matthew or get somebody else into one, and they surely won't be sorry. The next thing is music on course. And there's definitely people who fall into two, they say there's two different categories, people who like music on the golf course and people who don't like music on the golf course, but more and more people do. If you are one of those people, try the Blue Tees Golf Player Plus, the GPS speaker with a touchscreen display. It has two things combined into one functional unit, and that is a Bluetooth speaker and a rangefinder. The speaker gives you great sound, and the rangefinder is deadly accurate. Those are two things that you definitely need. They're combined in one just easy-to-use package. The price for that is just $199. I think it's a great addition to any golf bag that you'd want to see, that you'd want to find. Go get yourself one of these Blue Tees Golf Player Plus GPS packages. You won't be sorry. Let's see. We're going to move on our last two couple of things here. Tifosi Rivet Sports Sunglasses. I am a big fan of Tifosi. They have great sunglasses that have a great shading. They have a variety of shadings that are perfect for golf. Some shading for golf sunglasses or purported golf sunglasses are too dark. They're just too dark. They don't let you see the ball. But these are guys, Tifosi, who make great glasses for cycling. They make great glasses for a lot of sports, for shooting sports. And you'll have a great set of golf sunglasses here. They are on a sale now on Amazon. They're only $49 a pair. So it's really something to look into for yourself and for your loved one. Get on them, the Tifosi sunglasses. And let's see. Let's go last but not least. Last but not least, we do have a set of winter gloves. We know that it's winter right now in a lot of the country, so it can get kind of cold, but that's not going to want to stop. That's not going to stop a lot of people from going out on the golf course. Get yourself a pair of these FootJoy Winter Soft gloves. You do play a pair of them, and whether for winter or early spring, it really is a game changer. It helps you feel comfortable while hitting really good shots. I get them out, you know, sort of like November, December time, because you can play some rounds around where I am in Washington, D.C. during that time. They are really a great fit, great look, and at only $27, they're a great price and a great addition to what you will see on the golf course. So get yourself into the FootJoy Wintersoft pair of golf gloves. Again, there's so many great gifts that are out there for golf and the golf interested. And there's more people interested in golf now than ever, which I'm so grateful for. But this short list will give you a way to go out and get yourself some of the great things that are available for golfers now and put yourself in their good graces. And while you're getting something for them, get some for yourself. You know, get a 2-for-1. And you'll make yourself have a great golf 2026, as I know you will. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with just a little more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Well, that's it, and that's all. For this edition of the 19th Hole, I want to give my very special thanks to Brad Schweigert from PXG, giving us so much information about the company, what they're all about, and what they have coming up. Check out their stuff, all of it, the irons, the Gen 8s, the new woods that are out there. There's absolutely nothing not to like about what PXG does, but different strokes for different folks. Go out and hit them for yourself and see what you think. Let me know. Also, my very special thanks to Brad Klein. I told you he was he's just a resource. He's just one of those people who you go to find out what's what in golf. And he certainly imparted some of that knowledge here with us today. And I am so grateful that he did so. You can catch this podcast and all of the episodes of the podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Spotify and wherever fantastic podcasts are made available. Thank you for listening. As they say in the restaurant business, we do it all for you. We look forward to having you back for another episode of the 19th Hole. But in the meantime, huddle up if you're in a cold weather place like me, or strip down in some shorts if you're in a warm weather place. Enjoy it. Either way, go out, hit some balls, and when you do, try your best to hit him straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.